is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, anything is possible this March with our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Get a huge $2,000 trade-in discount on a new machine in March when you trade in any old Dr. Dish machine. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Tim Hoyer from 180 Coaching, and you're listening to Hoopheads podcast.
If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads mentorship program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at Hoopheads Pod on Twitter and Instagram, and be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. And we are going to talk some NBA. We are going to disparage James Harden. And I believe we're going to start with some trivia. So let's go ahead.
Mike, you got to get back on defense.
What? No. Don't worry about that, man. I got it on the offensive end. I'm all set. I'm ready to shoot 3 for 20 tonight.
Okay. All right. Last night, Karl Anthony Towns is the first center to have 60 points in a game since this player did it.
Not David Robinson.
60 points. Center.
Shaq.
Okay. 2000. Okay. Yesterday, Steph Curry had 47 points against the Wizards on his 34th birthday. Those 47 points are the fourth most points by a player on their birthday in NBA history. Name the three players who have scored more points on their birthday.
Come on, man. More points than 47 on their birthday?
Yeah, I'll give you a hint. One was the answer to the last question because it actually is this answer to the same question.
Shaq?
Shaq scored 60 on his birthday.
Okay.
That's the most points.
Michael Jordan?
Nope.
LeBron,
he's third.
And I need one more?
One more. He played while I was alive, although I don't really remember many of his games. He also competed in an epic slam dunk contest.
Larry Nance?
No.
An epic slam. Dominique Wilkins.
There you go. Dominique Wilkins is the other guy. Okay. Right. Last one. Yesterday, Karl-Anthony Towns, Steph Curry, and Trae Young all score at least 45 points. This is the first day in NBA history there has been a 45-point scorer in three different games. It's the first time since December 13th, 1983, that three different players scored 45 points on the same day. What are the three players on December 13th, 1983 that scored 45 points?
1983. All right, let's go 1983. Let's go Alex English.
There's one. Look at you. Good job.
Just trying to think of scorers from that era. 1983. Give me, whew, man. I mean, obviously, you'd have
it was all in the same game. I'll give you that hint, too.
It was all in the same game that these guys scored over 40?
Yes, all 45.
Oh, so this is the highest. So this is Isaiah.
Okay.
Adrian Dantley.
Nope.
Fat Lever.
Nope. He's got a funny name.
He's got a funny name. Not Fat Lever. That's a pretty funny name. So
I've heard this. So name. I've heard so this name. So I believe he was a. I believe he was a GM at one point. Maybe a coach.
So it's obviously. So the two teams are Denver and the Pistons. So this is the highest scoring game of all time. So I've got.
Yep, he's been a coach and an executive.
He's been a coach and an executive.
He was a coach for the. He was an assistant coach for the Mavericks, and he spent 2 years coaching the New Jersey Nets, or one season coaching the New Jersey Nets.
Man, those are good. Those are good hints. I should know which team was he on.
He was on at the time. He was on the Nuggets.
Oh, Kiki Vandeweghe.
There you go.
All right. Yeah, I should have got that faster, but
that's all right. I've got one more. I'm sorry. I forgot that this one. This one just popped up tonight. So I'm going to give you this last one, and then I'll be done, Mike. Okay. So yesterday, Karl Anthony Towns scored 60 points. Tonight, Kyrie Irving scored 60 points. It's the first time since 1962 that on back-to-back days, someone has scored 60 points. What players in 1962 scored 60 points on back-to-back days?
Wilt.
And?
Elgin Baylor.
No. It was kind of a trick question.
Oscar Robertson. Wilt.
It's Wilt and Wilt.
Okay.
There we go.
All right.
That's a good one, isn't it? That's a good fun fact.
That is a good one. Well, that, I mean, that, they're, he probably did it. He had to have done it multiple times that season, I'm guessing. He averaged 50.
Well, it was back-to-back days. So, like, on a back-to-back.
Yeah, but still, you're averaging 50. You got to figure at some point you're getting back-to-back 60s.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe not, but.
That's crazy.
Yeah, Wilt has a lot of crazy records, let's put it that way.
All right. So those are my trivia for the night, Mike. Those are all good ones.
They were good. That's good trivia.
Okay, so we're going to start with the Cavs briefly. I think last week I said if I would be happy if we walked away 2-1. We ended up 1-2. I mean, I wasn't overly surprised by the results. I mean, I thought we played tough against the Heat for a little bit. We played tough against the Bulls. I think we could have won that game. We just kind of that second quarter killed us. And then we won yesterday, which is good. It was not as pretty, but I really think the Caris LeVert thing is huge because when Darius wasn't on the floor, LeVert was doing stuff that we hadn't seen the offense do, which was good. Obviously, they need to work him into this situation. He hasn't get along, hasn't had as much time to work, but I liked what I saw yesterday. I know the game was closer than it probably should have been, and it should have never gotten to the point of overtime, but a win is a win. We're going to take a win. The next week is going to be pretty brutal, except for Friday, theoretically. Or not Friday. Except for, Saturday, theoretically. But, you know, this is a nice stretch where we have 8 out of 9 at home. So I'm going to think positively. You know, obviously we didn't know when we recorded last week that Jaren Allen was going to be out for an extended period of time. Now Rondo, again, sprained ankle. That was pretty brutal. I'm actually just happy that it was a sprain for him because it looked a lot worse than that. They're hanging tough, Mike. I just don't know. I don't know if, you know, we just got, my view is we got to get to April. And if we can get to April and still be in the sixth seed, I feel like we'll end in the sixth seed if we get to April in the sixth seed because our April schedule is pretty nice. But we got to get there.
All right. So let's address, I'll take the Caris LeVert piece of it first. So I agree with you 100% that LeVert adds an element to what the Cavs do that they haven't had. And so it gives you another guy who can get into the lane, who's a little bit slithery going to the basket and can generate some offense, which they really haven't had anybody besides Garland be able to do that since Rubio went out. So I think LeVert adds something definitely on the offensive end of the floor. And I thought, honestly, I thought his defense in the fourth quarter, I thought he really busted his tail. Well, and tried
considering
to play,
considering he was on a minutes restriction, Mike, they said, oh, he's not going to play more than 20 minutes. And then he played all of overtime. He played I think he ended up playing 26 minutes in the game, even though he was only supposed to play 20 minutes. So
I thought his contributions on the defensive end of the floor were as important last night, at least, as his contributions on the offensive end of the floor.
Yeah.
And yeah, you were right that that was a game that probably shouldn't have gone to overtime. I think they were up 191 maybe, and it just kind of fell apart from there, and they let the Clippers get back into it. But that speaks to the fact that this team offensively, it's a struggle, and trying to figure out how to generate offense in big moments, I think has been kind of tough. Obviously Garland is able to create offense, but everybody else, with the exception of, I think LeVert can create offense, but he's still not quite where we hope he's going to be by the time the playoffs roll around. And Mobley had 30 last night, but Mobley's still not at the point where you're like, okay, Mobley, here's the ball, go get us a basket. He just doesn't have the handle yet. I think that's the biggest thing that he's going to have to work on if he's going to become more of that type of player that people envision for him. I think that's the one thing that he's going to have to work on between this season and next, is just his ability to handle the ball, put it on the floor, and be able to get to the basket. So their offense, I think, bogs down a little bit in the last few minutes, but they were able to then come back in overtime and beat the Clippers. It was an uneven performance, but those are games that you have to win, especially sort of as you're in the midst of the stretch of games that they're in, and with the injuries and just everything that's going on. Anytime you can gut out those wins, it was kind of like the Pacers win that we talked about last week and beating Toronto. Those are games that weren't necessarily pretty. They're not blowouts. They're not killing anybody like they were at the beginning of the year. Most of the games that we're winning at this point are kind of slogs, and you're just having to figure out a way to get through it. But you have to do that. You have to win those games. And if you don't, Toronto is right there. So Toronto, as of the time we're recording, is only a game back. And although we hold the tiebreaker, which effectively makes it a two-game cushion over Toronto, as well as Toronto's seemingly been playing, although they've caught some breaks with the schedule just in terms of who they're playing and when they've been playing them on this West Coast swing. I do think that, as you said, the Cavs have this next stretch here is going to be important. They play some good teams, but they're also playing at home, where they've been a pretty good home team. And I think if they can kind of keep that going here over the next week and a half, that they should be able to stick. And I think you look at the standings overall, and we know that the Celtics have been playing much, much better. It seems unlikely that the Cavs are going to be able to catch the Celtics, even though the Celtics are only, what, they're a game or a game and a half ahead of the Cavs at this point. I think the more likely scenario is that Chicago seems like they're scuffling a little bit. I think if the Cavs are going to move up, which I'm not sure that's really what is going to happen, but if they're going to move up, I think they'd be more likely to pass Chicago. It'll be interesting to see where they finish. I mean, obviously we hope they avoid the play-in, especially because if you're in that seven slot, you're probably going to play Brooklyn. And based on what we've seen from Brooklyn lately, if Kyrie is able to play and if Durant's out there, I'd say your odds of winning that one game play-in are pretty slim. And now you're looking at having to play a win-or-go-home game against Charlotte or Atlanta, most likely, which, not that you should be afraid of either of those teams, but I don't feel like that those games are automatic by any means for the Cavs. So hopefully they can stay in that sixth spot. And then, as we talked about last week, in my mind, I think just looking at the playoff seeding, I'd want to avoid Milwaukee if I could, and I would take my chances with any of the other teams. Not that the Cavs would be favored by any means, but I also don't think that I would go into any other series and say, oh, the Cavs have no chance.
Yeah, I agree. I like I don't know. You know, we don't know what's going to end up happening. Like, how long is Jared Allen? They never gave a timetable. They just said indefinite, and I don't like that. That scares me a little. Indefinite scares me.
It seems like, though, man, with a broken finger, come on. Like, it doesn't seem like it can be – it can't be that long.
I would hope.
I mean, I guess you can – I mean, maybe until it's completely healed, but it also seems like something that – and if you had to play through it to play in the playoffs, it seems like that's something that
you could play through. I mean, I played with a broken finger.
Maybe I'm wrong, but
I mean, I'm not trying to call him soft or anything, but maybe they're just like, they want him to be healed so that he's healthy for the playoffs. Maybe that's the tack they're going to make. No, we got to get there. No, listen, I was talking at work. It's going to, it would literally, they would have to lose the rest of their games to not make the play-in game at this point. Like that would at least, so we know that they're in the play-in games. We know that. I feel confident in saying that. I mean, it's a 10.
Which back in September, October, everybody would have said that's a huge win for this season.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, we're 10 games ahead of Washington. Washington's not. Right. I almost feel comfortable saying that we're a lock to be a 7-8 when we're 5 games ahead of Atlanta. I would like to think that we'd be a 7. I feel comfortable saying a 7-8. Given that last 2 weeks of our schedule, it looks pretty soft. But I don't know. I don't know if I'm 100% comfortable saying that yet. But I mean, if we get the 7-8, then more than likely we're playing Brooklyn in the first round.
Okay? That's what I'm saying.
That's not a good position to be in.
It seems likely you'd lose that game.
It's likely.
Although I guess
If it's in Brooklyn and Kyrie can't play, I mean,
yeah, but right, yeah, that's a case where you might rather be on the road. Although I would not want to face Durant with the idea that
it's a win or go home.
Yeah, if it's a win or go home with Durant, yeah, I'm not sure I'm excited to face Durant even whether Kyrie's there or not.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Anyways, so I don't know. I'm still confident about the Cavs. Like I said, like you said, they have the tiebreaker with Toronto. Do we have another game against Toronto, or are we done against Toronto? I think we're done against Toronto.
No, we play one more right as soon as this homestand ends. So a week from Thursday.
Okay, but we've locked in to the tiebreaker with them, right? There's no way.
Correct. We've won all 3 games against them to this point.
Okay, good. Well, let's make it 4 and really just end it. That's what I say. Okay.
Yeah, that sounds like a good
plan. Let's predict the. The outcomes. So tomorrow they play the 76ers. I think that's a loss. I know it's at home, but it's a loss, Mike. And I don't know if you want to talk about Harden or do you want to save that for after we do the predictions.
Let's just quickly predict this. So I'm going to predict a 2-1 week, and I'm going to predict that they either get Philly or Denver. They get one of those 2 wins, and based on the game that I saw those 2 teams play against one another.
Wait. There's 4 games this week, Mike.
Oh, because we have the Lakers.
We have the Lakers on Monday, 3-1.
All right. So I'm gonna say we're gonna go 3-1 this week.
Ooh, I like it.
3-1. So that makes you 4-1 on the homestand, which I think.
I think take 3-2 personally. I would take 3-2. Ideally, I'd like to go 4-1, but.
I agree. You would take 3-2,
especially with who you're playing. I mean, yes. Toronto should be a gimme.
Well, Toronto, you're at Toronto, after the home stand.
I'm not Toronto. I mean, Detroit should be a gimme theoretically, and it's on a
except for we're what 0-2 against Detroit, or we won
0-2, but yeah. We've been in their place both other times. So
well, we probably are more than, let's see. We lost to them. I feel like we must have beat them once early in the season because, yeah, we beat them once. So we're 1-2 because I think you play. They're in our central division. Not the divisions mean a thing, but we're 1-2 against Detroit, which is not good. It's not good. That should be a 3-0 record if you're a team in the Cavs position playing against Detroit. Although Detroit's been playing better, and clearly Cade has come on here as the season has gone along and. He's demonstrating why he was considered pretty much universally the number one guy that everybody wanted. And over the last month, 6 weeks, he's really turned it on where he's averaging like, I don't know, 22-6-5 and just is playing much, much better. And I think if you're Detroit, you have to feel pretty good about that pick. Whereas early in the season, that was looking kind of shaky. It was looking like, ooh, boy, you really passed on Mobley, and I'm not sure what you got in Cade. And Cade's really come around, and it's clear at this point that he's going to be one of the better players in the league moving forward at some point.
I agree.
So, but I still think in this game, you got a game against Detroit at home when you're battling for playoff position. That has to be a game that you put in your back pocket. You got to win that one. So I'll say 3-1. I say we beat the Sixers. We'll lose to Denver, beat Detroit, beat the Lakers. How about that?
Sounds like a plan. LeBron's going to have a 50-point night or something on that game or something stupid. Just whatever you do, let Westbrook shoot it. That's the game plan, guys. Let Westbrook shoot it.
The Lakers are a mess. I mean, they're
just... There's no way he can play there next year, right? There's no way Is he going to force his way out, Mike?
I mean,
how many legitimately? How many more years is he going to be able to play at the level he's playing? Is he want to waste it in this situation? Like,
so is he gonna demand a trade because he's signed? Like, he's not a free agent. He's signed through next season. So is he going to go in and demand a trade from LA?
Would that completely shock you?
No, it wouldn't shock me. I'm just asking the question. Would he do that? I don't know. With as much the decision to go to Los Angeles, the fact that he's relocated there, right? That's where he's going to live moving forward. It seems like it's to go to the Lakers and say, hey, I want to be traded. I'm not sure that's what he wants to do. Maybe it is. I guess the counterpoint to that is, what can the Lakers really do to improve this team? If you're trading Westbrook, you're not getting anything back for Westbrook. Westbrook is, at this point, I mean, he's a tax. Anything that you throw on there, you're going to have to attach things to Westbrook in order to get rid of him. And you're not getting back anything that's going to move the needle in any significant way, right? So they have, because they wait till the summer, at the trade deadline, they could only trade that 2027 first round pick. And if they wait till the summer, they can also trade their 2029, which is fine. If you're another team, you want to trade for that and say, oh, the Lakers, by that point, LeBron will be retired. By that point, the Lakers could have a whole new roster full of NBA stars that want to play for the Lakers. That's 7 years from now. So to say, oh, LeBron's going to be retired. Well, yeah, he probably is, but you can't tell me that the Lakers couldn't recycle the mystique of the Lakers 7 years from now and make those picks a lot less valuable. So I don't know that what they have to offer to another team gives them any discernible route to be able to build a better team. Now you can say, well, if you have Davis and you have LeBron, that if you can just get three or four of the right role players around those two guys, and those two guys can be right as you go into the playoffs, that we can beat anybody. And I guess I wouldn't tell you that you're wrong in that, but every year that ticks by, LeBron is a slightly less fearsome version of himself. And Davis, we talked about it, I don't know if that was last week or 2 weeks ago, I wouldn't put any eggs in the Davis basket because they're probably going to crack, because the guy is so fragile. And if you're relying on him to be the guy that's going to help carry you, like, again, there was the thought, right, that LeBron's going to pass the torch to AD. As LeBron starts to fade a little bit, AD steps up and becomes the man. It seems obvious at this point.
That was 2 years ago. I remember that. That was before the pandemic, Mike. That was before the pandemic.
I mean, at this point, it doesn't seem that is even remotely feasible, where Davis is going to become the guy for the Lakers as LeBron fades off into the background. I just don't see that happening. I don't see Anthony Davis being built that way, both from a physical dependability standpoint and just from a mental capacity / leadership standpoint. To me, I don't see him stepping up and filling that role. And look, you'd have to hit every single minor transaction. The way this year they basically missed on every minor transaction that they did, they'd have to hit on every minor transaction that they did this offseason. And even then, you'd basically be looking at LeBron, AD, and four or five or six minimum salaried guys, which in the league today, I just don't think that's a championship formula. It's just, to me, it's just not. And you're stuck with what you have. So does LeBron ask for a trade? Do the Lakers accommodate him in any way? I don't know. They didn't do anything at the trade deadline because they're like, we're not mortgaging our entire future for this team that isn't going anywhere. So maybe next year you play it out if you're the Lakers, and just after that you see what, you know, you see what happens. I don't know. To me, I mean, he can't afford to, well, he can, because I don't know what motivates LeBron. How motivated is he to beat Kareem? It seems like he's pretty motivated, right?
Yeah.
At this point, it seems like he's going to keep playing and putting up numbers. So the question becomes, what does he want to win? Another title? Is that more important to him? Where maybe he goes, and I know we've said it a million times, he's not going to accept a lesser role. The idea that LeBron's going to go and be, oh, I'm just going to ride on the coattails of whoever. It's not happening. Whatever team he goes to, that immediately becomes LeBron's team, regardless of where he's at from a skill standpoint and comparative to his prime. But if I was betting, I would bet he plays next season in LA and then he walks in free agency. I don't see the Lakers trading him, although maybe they do, because you look at it and you say, we've traded away everything. We mortgaged everything to get Davis in here to pair with LeBron. And now once he walks, we're kind of back in this, what are we? But if you trade him, now you can maybe get back some good players, some draft picks, some things that will allow you to rebuild around Davis. Maybe you trade Davis too, and you just try to go young. And again, thinking that you're the Lakers are always going to be able to attract free agents. It's not like you're trying to get guys to come and play for the Cavs. You're getting them to play for the marquee franchise in the league and live in Southern California. That's a pretty easy sell for the Lakers moving forward. So even if it doesn't work out with LeBron and AD, the next round of NBA superstars is always going to be willing to take a look at the Lakers as long as they're semi-functionally run. And maybe that's the direction they go.
Yep. I think he forces his way out somehow, some way. I don't know how. I don't know what happens, but I don't think he plays for the Lakers next year. That's what I'm
saying. Where's he go? Where's he go, though? Where's he go? Like, where's a ready-made team that if you say, okay, we're going to add LeBron to this team?
I don't know. I'm not going to say Cleveland. I'm not going to do it.
No, you're not going to say it?
I mean, that would be an answer, but I'm not going to say it. Because I wouldn't want to give up what we'd have to give up to get him. So that would be the thing.
I wouldn't trade for him. But if he wanted to come here a year and a half from now in free agency and he was still functional, I think, look, the honest truth is that I'm not sure I would want him. But at the same time, I'm pretty sure I would want him, if that makes any sense. There certainly would be negatives that we know that would come along with it. But if you could put some version of LeBron, and it's probably going to be a pretty good version based on the way he's aged to this point, you put him with the core that we have where you don't have to give up anything to bring him in, that's a pretty appealing prospect. But look, let's just very quickly, spending 2 seconds on each of these teams.
Oh, God. Here we go. 2 seconds.
No, listen. He's not going to Miami, right? He's not going back to Miami.
No.
Milwaukee makes no sense. Philly, he's not going to play with Harden and Embiid. Chicago, I'd say that's a maybe. I could see that as a maybe. Boston, no.
I don't think he would touch Chicago because it's MJ. He would never do that. Unless he wants to win a championship there and be like,
that's what I'm saying.
Chicago.
Right, that's what I'm saying. I think the Bulls would be a maybe. Toronto?
No.
He's not going.
It is Lebronto.
He's not going to Canada. Brooklyn, he's not going to play with Kyrie. Atlanta.
Well, he was tweeting really about Kyrie tonight.
Yeah, maybe he was, but he's not going to Brooklyn. He's not going to Atlanta. He's not going to. Maybe he wants to go play for MJ in Charlotte.
No way.
Okay, so that's the East. Is he going to Phoenix?
CP3? No.
Memphis? Could he go to Memphis?
No, that's actually not a bad spot.
Memphis, I could see Memphis. Golden State, no. Utah, no. Dallas, no.
Dwayne Wade is a partial owner in Utah, though.
Yeah, maybe, but I don't see him going to live in Utah. Denver?
He'd probably think they'd poison his pizza or something.
Denver? Does he want to play with Jokic?
No.
No. Minnesota? No. Clippers? Could he go to the Clippers?
That would be great.
Could he take like the mid-level exception and go play for the Clippers?
That would be great. Do you imagine what? Okay, that's what I want. What about Sacramento?
No, he's not going.
The King plays for the Kings.
He's not going to Sacramento. Could he go to Portland and play with Dame? No, they don't have enough. So, all right. So the most likely outcome,
according to us,
LeBron James, places he could play next year: the Clippers, Memphis, the Bulls,
and the Cavs.
Or the Cavs. Yeah. That's it. That's the short
list. If he leaves the Lakers.
Mark it down. One of those four places is where he's going to end up if he leaves the Lakers.
What if he went to New Orleans?
Maybe.
Griff?
Maybe. I guess that would be a long shot. Let's put them in.
He'd go to New Orleans and then play with all the players that he traded away for Anthony
Davis. That's right. Well, he'd have left is Brandon Ingram. Everybody else that got traded.
Larry Nance Jr., CJ McCollum. It'd be like the Cleveland connection.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. That's true. All guys, all Northeast Ohio guys. Yeah, Jackson Hayes, Ohio guy.
Yeah.
So
just don't. No. Never mind.
Yeah, it's not gonna happen. So, I would say New Orleans is a long shot. So mark it down. You heard it here first. Chicago, right. Cleveland, Memphis, or the Clippers for LeBron. Good
okay,
luck with that
sounds good. Okay, we went on a long tangent about LeBron there. So, the whole point originally was I asked if you wanted to talk about James Harden, and then we started talking about LeBron. So,
can I just say my piece
about James Harden? So
I guess I go was, ahead.
Last
go
week
ahead.
When we were recording, James Harden put up a big dud against Brooklyn, and then after the game last night, they asked him what they could do better, and he says, "We got to get back on defense." And as soon as I saw that quote, I immediately sent it to you, Mike, and I said, "Is this guy seriously talking about defense? The guy who's never played a lick of defense in his life? Well, that's not fair. He's played defense a few times, but." Come on now, man. Like, we're already calling the teammate, calling people out for not playing defense. Listen, oh boy. The Sixers, it's not going to work, Mike.
Hey, college basketball fans. Join the action during March Madness with DraftKings Sportsbook. Turn your team's victories into your own big win. New customers can bet $5 on any team to win and get $200 in free bets if they do. It's that simple. If they win, you win. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, you can still join the college hoops action with DraftKings Pools. Everyone can play free pools all March long for a shot at a share of over $250,000 in prizes. Simply join a pool and answer questions like, who will make it to the next round and who will hit the most three-pointers? Then track your results. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code HOOPHEADS. Bet $5 on any college hoops team to win and get $200 in free bets if they do. If they win, you win with promo code HOOPHEADS this week at DraftKings Sportsbook. 21 and over. Restrictions apply. See show notes for details. Let's go back to the Brooklyn game, first of all. And we were actually recording and not one of our NBA episodes, but we were recording our normal coaching interview episodes during that game. So I didn't get to watch much of it live, but I got to watch the GameCast and Box Score. And the first time I looked at the box score, James Harden was 1 for 9. And I couldn't have been less surprised. Like, if you would have told me, hey, you're about to check the box score, what do you think James Harden is shooting from the field right now? 1 for 9 would have been pretty high on the list of shot charts that I would have selected. Because, look, it's clear at this point, these type of games from James Harden are not aberrations. And he's a fantastically skilled player. He's a guy who's put up as a regular season NBA player. You look at his statistical resume and it ranks right up there with the best players of all time. But when push comes to shove in a big moment, in a playoff game, in a game like this, which effectively, from an emotional standpoint, from a meaning standpoint, from a human being standpoint, like, that game had to mean something to the participants in the game. How could it not? Like, you're Harden, you force your way out of there, then you're going to go back and you're going to play against that team. If anybody who's out there listening, just try to put yourself in the shoes of James Harden and think about how much you would want to win that game, right? Like, wouldn't you want to win and do anything you possibly could to win that game against the team that, for whatever reason, you didn't feel was worthy of getting your services? Don't you want to win that game? Like, isn't that game important to you?
It's very important, Mike.
And then you just come out and, like, you just, like, the game gets totally taken to you. And I just don't understand that as a competitor. And I don't understand how it happens to you over and over and over and over again. And people want to continue to, I don't know if make excuses, but it's just at this point, waiting for James Harden to come through in a big game or a big playoff series or a big playoff run, it ain't happening. Like, he is who he is. And in big moments, he's not going to be there when you need him. And I'm sorry. Like, you can say, oh, everybody can change, or it's just things that he's been unlucky or this or that. I don't buy that. There's something about the way the guy's wired that he just doesn't step up into that moment. And you look at how Brooklyn played in that game, and you think about what Durant and Kyrie did. You think about Kyrie saying, hey, I'm going to guard this guy. And Kyrie, who's obviously not known as a defensive player, but in that game, it was more
defense.
Right. It was more about the challenge. It was more about, here's a guy who walked out on us. This game means something. I'm a competitor. I'm not going to let this guy get the best of me. And to me, that's what great players do. They don't shy away from that moment. And Harden just shies away from the moment. He just does. And there's no way, shape, or form around it. And as I've said several times, I'm sorry to inform you, Philly fans, but it ain't happening. And if you think James Harden is going to come through in a big playoff game, in a big playoff moment, in a big playoff series, and he's going to put together 4 or 6 or 7 games that are needed in order to beat a really good team, it's not happening. I'm sorry. It's just not.
You couldn't have said it better yourself, Mike, and we've said it so many times. People of the podcast are going to think that it's our shtick talking about Harden like this, but it's just the bottom line. He just comes up small in the big games. I mean, even the game against the Cavs, Mike, when we were hanging tough with Philly, like, I found myself, even though we've seen what he can do statistically, every time he got the ball, I was like, oh, please give the ball to James Harden. I'd rather it be in his hands than some of the other players on his team, even though he's a better player than them, because I don't trust him to do anything, Mike. So here's to the Philly fans. I feel for you. You know, if they win the NBA championship this year, we'll eat our eat our words, okay? And but it will be a painful championship to watch. So I'm hoping on all that is holy, on God, that they don't, because I just can't. I can't envision it, and I don't want it to happen. So.
All right, so I have one other thing to go with, and this is more speaks to why I don't think Philadelphia is going to win the title, more so than denigrating James Harden. But so last night, Philly plays the Nuggets. Probably the two leading MVP candidates, maybe two of the three, if we throw Giannis in there, which, by the way, he's much more than a throw Giannis in there with what he's been doing.
No LeBron. But
no LeBron is MVP?
All-time
no, there's
oldest man to ever lead the NBA in scoring?
LeBron has no chance to win the MVP. Okay,
I'm just throwing. I know, I'm just kidding. Sorry, we don't need to talk about LeBron anymore. I apologize.
Let's leave it there. LeBron is not winning the MVP this year. So, I don't know, did you catch any of that game, Denver and Philadelphia?
I caught bits and pieces. I mean, Embiid looked okay. He scored 34 points. He went, 34-9-4, 11 of 20 from the field.
Did you see the end of the game?
I did not. I saw the run in the end of the second quarter, leading into halftime. I did not see the end of the game.
All right, so I watched bits and pieces of it, and then I watched probably the last 6 minutes. And in the last 6 minutes, there was a play that told me not everything I need to know, and this isn't necessarily an indictment of Embiid the same way that we've been indicting James Harden over time, but with, I don't know, there was maybe 8-9 seconds to go and Embiid was out of the game. I think because he had 5 fouls. So they took him out because they didn't want him to have to intentionally foul Denver. And then they wanted to have him back in for their final offensive possession. But Embiid was sitting on the scorer's table as I think it was Will Barton was at the line, and they pan the camera over to Embiid sitting on the scorer's table, and he looked like he had just ran like 4 marathons in a row. He was completely and utterly, he just looked exhausted. And when I think about what has held Embiid back from maximizing his talent, I think about that conditioning piece and what he's been able to do. Again, in the playoffs where you have to play 40, 42, 44, 46 minutes if you're the best player. And Embiid's track record says that if he's playing that many minutes, that in fourth quarters he hasn't been nearly as effective because he just, I don't know if it's not as, he's not in as good a shape, whatever it is, but he looked completely, completely gassed sitting there on the scorer's table. And then the last possession, Harden brought the ball up, passed it to Embiid, and Embiid kicked it out to Georgie Nang for a three that he missed.
2 for 12, that guy, by the way.
And then he got Nang got the rebound, and then he missed a little floater, and then Jokic got the rebound and went to the other end and made 1 of 2 to seal the game. And Embiid had a great game. Look, statistically, Embiid goes for 34. He's got 9 rebounds. He got 4 assists. He was tremendous. And you probably could make an argument that he outplayed Jokic. Jokic, I think, ended up with, what did he end up with? 22. He went 22, 13, and 8. So Jokic had, I guess he was 4 points under his scoring average, but he was pretty much right on his other averages. Jokic didn't look gassed, although Jokic has had a couple games. Nuggets have played a lot of games in a short amount of time, and I know they were on the road, and Jokic had a couple of, again, for him, subpar games. But I look at the combination of what Harden is and what Embiid's flaws and shortcomings are, and I just don't see that team being able to win a title. I don't see it. I don't see the toughness. I don't see the, I don't know what the right word is, but the mental fortitude. I just don't see them when the chips are down in a crucial moment in the last 2 minutes of game 5 or game 6. I don't see those two guys being up to it. I just don't. And they're both tremendously talented, but I think other teams have guys that are just mentally tougher. And as a result of that, I just don't see Philly. I don't see Philly winning a title. I don't see them winning the Eastern Conference and even getting to the finals. And in all honesty, I'd be kind of surprised if they win more than a round. I think they, to me, they're ripe to get beat in the second round once you start looking at the matchups.
Okay, that's fair, Mike. That's totally fair. All right, so the other thing we wanted to talk about, Mike, is we just wanted to kind of look at the play-in game situation right now and where we are with that. Does that sound good? Like, just talking
sounds
about...
Sounds good to me.
Because we spent a lot of time talking about the teams at the top, so we're going to talk about the team, and we don't really want to spend any time talking about the teams at the bottom. So we're going to talk about the play-in games and where things are. I think I feel pretty comfortable in saying in the East, the top five seeds are probably locked in at this rate, right, Mike? Like, do you see any of those top five seeds coming down, Mike, in the East? Is Boston going to fall apart?
I don't think Boston, like I said, I think Chicago is a team that of the top five, if you told me that one of those teams was going to fall down into the six or seven seed, I would say Chicago is the most likely.
Okay.
But I would say it's unlikely only because either the Cavs or Toronto would have to get
scorching.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of those teams would have to go in their last 15 games. Somebody would have to go like 11-3 or 11-4, somewhere in there probably. Yeah. And Chicago would have to be probably below 500 for that to happen, which seems unlikely based on what we've seen. Certainly from the Cavs, I don't expect that good of a record. And Chicago, I know Caruso's back. I still don't know how far out Lonzo is. And obviously there's been Pat Williams rumors.
And Levine's been not playing, has been playing in and out. He's been in and out of the lineup. So
right. So if they get healthy, seems unlikely that they would drop. So I guess, yeah, it's pretty likely that those top five seeds are going to remain the same. I know we talked about it last week, how much of it is going to be shenanigans at the end of the season, trying to avoid if Brooklyn is still in that 7-8 hole. Are you going to try to avoid the 2 seed, which is, seems like the most likely place that Brooklyn would end up if they stay as the number 8 seed.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to be the 2, let's put it that way. No. If in that scenario.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. All right, so that leaves us with the situation that Cleveland is on the bubble. They're in the right now. They're at 6th place. They're a game ahead of Toronto. Brooklyn's 2.5 behind Toronto. Atlanta's a game and a half behind Brooklyn, and Charlotte is a half a game behind Atlanta. So here's what I'm going to say. You know, these five teams here, I think these are the five teams that are in running for the playing game. I don't think Washington is in the running for the playing game. I don't think the Knicks are in the running for the playing games. The Knicks are pitiful. And then obviously Detroit and Orlando have already been eliminated. Indiana is going to be eliminated soon. All right. So I think it's really down to those five teams, and I'm going to cross off the Knicks and Washington because I don't think they're in. So of those, you know, five teams, what would be the most, you know, we're talking playing games and we want to drum up interest. What would be the most intriguing matchup in the playing games, Mike, in your opinion, of those five teams, what would be the most intriguing? Would it be Cleveland, Brooklyn?
Well, I guess intriguing from my standpoint, I'd be intrigued by not having the Cavs.
Okay, let's just, what's the best game? Would that be the best game? Would Cleveland-Brooklyn be the best game?
You know what? I think the best game might be Atlanta-Brooklyn. Because I think Atlanta's ceiling with Trae Young in a one-game scenario, like let's say it's Atlanta-Brooklyn, somehow Brooklyn-Toronto beats Brooklyn because Toronto's hosting that game. Brooklyn can't bring Kyrie to that game across the border. So Brooklyn somehow loses to Toronto.
I didn't even think of that piece. I forgot that he can't play in Toronto, right?
Right. He cannot play in Toronto. So that would be another reason if you're an Eastern Conference team, you are rooting hard for Toronto to maybe remain in that 7th seed, and potentially that gives you the opportunity to get Brooklyn knocked out without Kyrie. So let's just say that Brooklyn
plays Toronto, they lose because they're playing in Toronto without Kyrie. That sets up a Brooklyn-Atlanta game where we saw what Trae Young did last year in the playoffs. And clearly, he's a guy who's not afraid of the moment. Now, has Atlanta been very good this year? No. But is Atlanta's ceiling pretty good if they play in a one-game scenario? If Trae goes for 45, are they capable of playing really, really well and beating Brooklyn in a one-game playoff? I'd say yes. I don't think Charlotte beats them, but I think Atlanta. To me, Atlanta-Brooklyn could be a fun game if it's a game that the Cavs aren't involved in. And the only reason I'd say the Cavs are a better matchup is because it would be the Cavs and we'd be rooting for our hometown team. But I think, Brooklyn-Atlanta is the most interesting game potentially in that mix.
Okay. I think the most intriguing would be Cavs Brooklyn. I don't think we'd win the game, but I think it would probably be the best. That would be the fun game. That would be fun. It'd be fun, but not good at the same time.
I'd like to see what the Cavs would do defensively with Brooklyn in a playoff series, who they would throw at Durant and how that would look. Do you throw Mobley at him?
I think you have to. Because, I mean, Okoro can't guard him. He's not tall enough. You know, Okoro is a great defender, but I don't think he has the wingspan to do it. I think you have to throw Mobley at him.
Yeah, I agree. I think Mobley would spend a lot of time on him. I think Okoro would probably be your secondary defender that would get an opportunity when Mobley was resting.
Yeah.
So that's I think, the intriguing thing when you look at the Cavs. If Jared Allen's back, if you have Jared Allen back and you have that 3-7-footer front line that you're starting, I think you look at the Cavs then as kind of a funky matchup that could make some other teams do some different things than what they might ordinarily do, which I think makes any Cavaliers series potentially intriguing. Again, if you have Jared Allen in there so you can start that monster front line.
Yeah. All right. On that note, let's talk about the Western Conference. Or is there anything else in the Eastern Conference, Mike? I mean, Charlotte would be interesting, but we saw what Charlotte did last year against the Pacers. They laid a complete egg. So,
and they haven't been good. They were playing much better earlier in the season. They really haven't done much of anything over the last month and a half. They've been very, very mediocre, and I don't think their ceiling is high. All three of those teams above them in the standings are better teams, both over the long haul and even in a one-game scenario. I think Toronto, Brooklyn, or Atlanta still all have higher ceilings than what Charlotte can put out there.
Okay. And then we look at the Western Conference. And, I mean, it's not a done deal here. Like, I feel like this is way more open, in my opinion, because, I mean, Denver's in the sixth seed. But they're only a game and a half ahead of Minnesota. So I think the six and seven seed, and then not only that, but Denver's only a game and a half behind Utah and Dallas. So really, the 4, 5, 6, and 7 seeds are all separated by three games or less. So I think those could be interchangeable, right, Mike? Do you agree? Like I agree
that those four teams. I would expect Minnesota to stay in the play-in, but
they've been playing so good, though.
They have. Could they
8-2 in the last 10?
Could they move up? I mean, they certainly could, but the teams above them, Utah, Dallas, and Denver, are all good teams. Denver, at some point, who knows with Jamal Murray? I keep hearing different things, and there really hasn't been any timetable, but I think the news has been more positive that they're going to get Michael Porter Jr. back. Again, who knows where he's going to be and how his back is and whatever. But Denver is still a good team. Dallas is a good team. Utah is a good team. And so I don't know that I see Minnesota creeping up in there. But as you said, they're only a game and a half back. And they're only three games back from being the four seed, which is hard to believe. And although to make up three games in 15 remaining games is kind of tough, It could happen. But I would anticipate that Minnesota is going to stay in the seven. And then who knows what the order is between Utah, Dallas, and Denver. And who knows who those teams want to play, right? Maybe there's a specific matchup as you go forward that teams start the standing shenanigans again and trying to figure out, hey, who do we, can we lose this game in order to make our draw more advantageous? Who do we want to face? Although I don't think there's an, if you're if you're in the 5-6 or eventually 7 or 8, I'm not sure that any one of those four teams above is a team that you'd be dying to play.
I think they're all tough teams. Yeah.
And I'm not sure that any one of them is more formidable than the other. Until we know what Chris Paul's health is, then maybe you put Phoenix on a slightly higher tier than Memphis, Golden State, and Utah. But if I'm any of those teams 5 through 8, I'm not sure I'm super excited to play Memphis, Golden State, or Utah.
Yeah. So then it comes down to the other teams for the play-in. So whoever ends up, like you said, you think Minnesota. I mean, I could see any of those teams really being there. Is Minnesota going to continue playing the way they're playing? I mean, I don't know. But then you get stuck with the two Los Angeles teams, New Orleans, and then I can't believe Portland is just still somehow hanging out there. Like
the bottom of the West from teams 9 through 15, that is atrocious. That is an atrocious list of teams. The Lakers are 2-8 in their last 10.
They have the worst record since the All-Star break.
And they're somehow still 2.5 games into the play-in. So 2.5 games ahead of Portland. And I know Portland's trying to lose, but Sacramento's trying to win. They're 5 games ahead of Sacramento.
They helped us out last night, Mike. Sacramento beat Chicago. That was helpful.
It's always a good win. But they're 5 games behind the Lakers, who are 2-8 in their last 10. So I think we can effectively write off the Sacramento Kings. And Portland, who knows? The Lakers are just, they're pitiful, as we discussed earlier.
What about the Spurs? They got the all-time leading coaching winner.
That's true. Congratulations to Greg Popovich. We didn't really talk about that, but quite a great accomplishment for Pop. They're 2 games back of New Orleans. New Orleans is trying to win. Look, I think it probably stays the way it is in terms of these four teams. I could see the Lakers falling below the Pelicans and being the 10 seed. But Portland, I can't see Portland winning enough games. I guess if Josh Hart, he had 44 the other night. I guess if Josh Hart keeps playing crazy like he has, maybe. San Antonio, I mean, I don't know. None of these teams are any good. The top 8 in the West are pretty good. I think the Clippers are a pretty good team. But those teams below them, the Lakers, Pelicans, Blazers, Spurs, Kings, Thunder, Rockets, whew, that bottom of the Western Conference is really bad. It is really bad.
Yeah.
Much, much worse than the bottom of the East.
I agree. I agree. They are terrible.
Even Detroit and Orlando, I feel, are a little bit more feisty than these teams at the bottom. Although, I guess Orlando wasn't very feisty tonight.
Well, you saw Isaac is out for the rest of the year again.
Did he come back?
No, they officially announced that he's not coming back.
That's a surprise. What's his over under on career games?
He's played more than Zion, I think.
You think? Right?
Oh, he's got to have.
I'm not sure. I'm gonna look it up. Let's look it up right now. Let's see. Let's look at his roster. Let's get to.
I'm looking at Basketball Reference.
I'm gonna get to it right now. Games played in his career, more than Zion, 136.
That's oh man, we could take a bet. Who's gonna play more in their career? Ooh.
I think I'd bet on Zion.
Oh, give me a break. Oh, man.
Jonathan Isaac said 2 career-threatening injuries.
Yeah.
I'll take give me Zion.
Okay.
Give me Zion.
Okay. All right. Anything else on the Western Conference ones, Mike? Or
no, that... I think do the Lakers have any chance of advancing into the playoffs in your mind?
Could they win the first game? Yes. Could they get into the play-in? Or could they get in through the play-in? I think they could. I mean, you don't want to play LeBron in a one-game series, right? Like, you'd be crazy to say you want to. Can they get to that first round? The actual round.
I think they could win two games.
I don't think that they have any chance after they win those two games, though.
No, they have no chance of going, no matter whether they finish as the 7 or the, well, if they're a 9 or 10, they have to finish in the 8 spot. So they're not. Phoenix. They're not going in and beating Phoenix.
Nope.
And to be honest, I think they're not. I don't see them beating the Timberwolves or the Clippers. I know the Timberwolves are the Timberwolves, but I don't see the Lakers beating either one of those teams.
So you're saying Khan's not walking through that door?
No, he's not. He's not. David Khan is not coming through that door. He is not.
All right.
Cat's coming through with his 60 points. Yeah. All right. I don't think there's anything else really major that we need to touch on.
Okay. So I have a question for you, Mike.
Sure. Go for it.
Are we doing dad jokes tonight or are we talking about Baker Mayfield? What's going to. No, that's. I know. We're doing dad jokes. I don't want to give Dan and the Brown stuff. That would be another half an hour discussion. I don't really want to do that tonight, Mike.
Well, can I just ask you one question?
Yes.
So we're not going to analyze it or do anything. Would you rather have Deshaun Watson or Baker Mayfield?
I'd rather have Baker Mayfield. Not for winning purposes. I don't want to deal with this. I don't know that I feel good. All the years that we mocked the Roethlisberger situation in Cleveland, and nothing to the level of what has been alleged towards Deshaun Watson. Which is a much greater, in my opinion, problem.
They declined to indict him.
I know, but he pled the Fifth Amendment so he wouldn't indict on himself, and they didn't have enough evidence.
Saying.
They never charged Ben Roethlisberger either. And for years,
they declined to indict him, baby.
Mike. What? We spent years in Cleveland talking about Ben Roethlisberger.
I understand.
Now that we've had this meeting,
is Baker mad? He wants out?
Well, he tweeted. You didn't see this?
No, I didn't see this.
Oh, he put out a statement. Hold on. I got you. Hold on. I got you, Mike. I know this is exactly what you wanted to spend our time talking. We're not doing dad jokes tonight, people. So if you're tuning in for dad jokes. Not.
Yeah, we got to do one. Come on.
Okay.
We'll just give me one. This tweet and then we're out. Just give me this tweet.
Baker,
and then we're
Baker's, out on the Browns. With many uncertainties, here is where my head is. And he took a screenshot notes because it's longer than the past 4 years have been nothing short of truly life changing since I heard my name called in the draft to go to Cleveland. This is not a message with hidden meaning. This is strictly to thank the city of Cleveland for embracing my family and I. We have made many memories and shared growing in this process through all the ups and downs. I have no clue what happens next, which is the meaning behind the silence I've had during the duration of this process. I can only control what I can, which is trusting in God's plan throughout this process. I have given this franchise everything I have. That is something I've always done at every stage and at every level, and that I will not change wherever I take my next snap. Whatever happens, I just want to say thank you to the fans who truly embraced who I am and the mentality that aligned so well with this city's hardworking people. Cleveland will always be a part of Emily and my story, and we will always be thankful for the impact it has had and will have in our lives. Sincerely, Baker Reagan Mayfield.
He's out, baby.
Right? I mean,
he's out.
There you go. Yeah.
He's out. Welcome to Cleveland, Deshaun Watson.
Well, or we don't get Deshaun Watson, and now you've got Baker, who clearly doesn't want to play here after being told, I mean, basically.
Case Keenum?
No, we're going to end up with Jimmy G.
Jimmy G.
Ugh.
No?
Ugh.
No? You're out on Jimmy G?
Oh, man. No.
Tom Brady? No. Can we swing a trade for Tom Brady?
No, no, not happening. All right, anyways, okay. so that's
all right, let's leave
so
it
that's
there.
That.
All right, you want to go first?
Yeah. Sure. How do you follow Will Smith in the snow?
Follow the Fresh Prince.
Oh, you heard that one before?
I've heard that one before. Oh, man. Yeah, no, yeah, I've heard that one. All right, here's one for you.
Okay, go ahead.
You got another one?
I'm going to find another one because that was bad. I never heard that one. I thought it was clever.
What do sprinters eat before a race?
Oh. I don't know.
Nothing. They fast.
Oh.
You got another one, or are we just calling it a day right there?
what did the janitor say when he jumped out of the closet?
I haven't heard this one.
Supplies.
That's good. I like it. That's pretty good. That's a good one.
That was a good one. There you go.
How do you get a secret message out of a cemetery?
You dig something or something.
You decrypt it.
I like that one. So tomorrow, in honor of our episode, and I want to give a shout out to one of my students who's been duly listening to our episodes, Mike. Caleb, one of my students named Caleb has been listening to the episodes, and he says that he listens to all the NBA stuff until the Cavs, and then he skips to the dad jokes because that's all he really cares about. Which he's an eighth grader. I understand that. All right.
So, all right, that's cool. So shout out to Caleb.
So Caleb. I'm going to have – I did this on one of my tests earlier this year, and I'm going to do it again tomorrow for my algebra students. I'm going to have them write a dad joke, and if they can make me laugh and when I on the back of their test, if they can make me laugh, then I'll give them a piece of candy or something. So
that's a good one. I like it. I like it.
Yeah. So
shout out, Caleb. Thanks for listening, man. Appreciate it.
No problem.
All right. Let's leave it there. Just want to say thanks to everybody out there, including Caleb, for listening to our NBA episode tonight. If you haven't had a chance to listen to our episodes this week, we had a really interesting and sort of different episode with Andrew Petcash, sports entrepreneur. We talked a lot about NIL and the transfer portal and sports and business. So that episode went out Monday. And then coming out on Friday, we have our roundtable. And this month's roundtable question talks about how you might handle your end of the season meetings with players. And so we had a lot of good response to that. And I think it'll be a very informative episode for coaches out there. So make sure you check those two out. Make sure you check out our sponsors, Dr. Dish, Fast Model, and DraftKings. And we appreciate you listening tonight. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.